This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Was the Oval Office Theater on Friday thin-skinned arrogance or high-stakes politics? Geopolitics? That's the question asked by the World Tribune. Democrats saw an arrogant bully who berated their best friend and then sent him home without lunch. The other side saw a master who is many moves ahead of his opponents on the chessboard of geopolitics. Analysis on the Trump-Zelensky Oval Office firefight has left many more confused than enlightened, says this article. For those who think that this was a temper tantrum by two thin-skinned egotists, Team Trump saw the stakes as being much higher than just the Ukraine-Russian conflict. Donald Trump said, "You're gambling with World War III. Your country is in big trouble. You're not winning. You have good chance of coming out okay because of us." Vice President J.D. Vance joined Trump in lambasting the Ukrainian. He said, "I think it's disrespectful for you to come to the Oval Office to try to litigate this in front of the American media." After showing Zelensky the door, Trump took to Truth Social and posted this. He said, "We had a very meaningful meeting in the White House today. Much was learned that could never be understood without conversation under such fire and pressure. It's amazing," he said, "what comes out through emotion. I don't want advantage. I want peace," said Zelensky. But Trump says he disrespected the United States of America in its cherished Oval Office. He can come back when he's ready for peace. But the Democrats were triggered. "Trump and Vance are doing Putin's dirty work," they said. "Sitting Democrats will never stop fighting for freedom and democracy. A hero and a coward are meeting in the Oval Office today," they said. "And when the meeting is over, the hero will return home to Ukraine." Republicans, even those who had been cozy with Zelensky in the past, backed Trump and Vance. "Thanks to President Trump, the days of America being taken advantage of and disrespected are over," said Speaker Mike Johnson. An Indiana Republican who was born in Ukraine said Zelensky is doing the Ukrainian people a serious disservice by insulting the American president. "This is not a theater act, but a real war," she said. "And all of this is just to appease Europeans and increase his low profiling and polling in Ukraine after he failed miserably to defend the country." Well, another observation was that the room in the Oval Office was obvious from the get-go. Pure tension. Welcome to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. Today on Viewpoint, we're going to take a look at this subject. And we're going to look at it very differently than most that you have heard out there, because the issue is far more complex than is being led to believe. This is not a matter of Republicans versus Democrats per se. This is a matter of viewpoint determining destiny. Viewpoints are at the heart of this issue. And if you're not willing to see the viewpoints and hear and understand the viewpoints on the other side, it's very hard to negotiate a deal, even though you've written the book, The Art of the Deal. And so we have a situation here where the new and returning president of the largest, most powerful country in the world, who has had such amazing results through 200 or so executive orders just flying out the Oval Office door day after day for the first 2.5-3 weeks, is feeling the wind behind his sails, the wind in his sails. And he's saying, "I wrote the book, The Art of the Deal, and we're in the driver's seat here, and it's time for us to start driving this vehicle, the Ukraine-Russian war." So his view is, we're going to have peace. We're going to have peace, and I'm going to be the peacemaker, and I'm going to tell you what to do, and I'm going to tell you how you're going to do it. And by the way, if you disagree, you're disrespectful. That's really what was said. Those words were not the things that were said, but that is what was said. But why would Zelensky disagree? There isn't much focus on that. But in order to understand that, we have to go back a little bit in history, maybe a long way in history, in order to understand the foundation of all of this. I remember a couple of years ago when we were in the heat of all of this, and I spoke with a pastor, a Slavic pastor, who pastors a very large Russian-Ukrainian church up in Massachusetts. I've spoken there about 8 or 9 times now. And I asked him, I said, Wally, what is your thought, what is your viewpoint concerning what's going on here with Russia and Ukraine? Here was his answer. It's very complicated, Chuck. It's very complicated. Now, he's a very strong Christian believer. He's not one to mince words, but he knows deeply what the history between these two countries is. And it ain't what most people think. And we're going to take a look at that. In fact, a couple of years ago, we did a complete expose, shall we say, on the matter of Ukraine and Russia. We looked at it in great depth, not just geopolitically, but also spiritually, because they all tie together. It's not just one or the other. It's both and a lot of other things as well. So we're going to take a look at the bigger picture here today on Viewpoint. There may be some things said that you may not like, but I hope that you'll listen to the whole program, not just in just bits and pieces, and grab a hold of something that you don't like without hearing the whole picture. That's our problem. Soundbite broadcasting, soundbite discussions don't cut it. Neither does reading a little portion of the Bible here and there cut it for studying the Bible. You can't say you know the Bible if you just read a verse here and a verse there. You're kidding yourself. You're not honest. And neither are we honest if we don't look at the bigger picture here. And so we're going to attempt to do that from both sides of the ledger. I'm an American, and I do believe that Donald Trump is doing a wonderful thing. In most instances, I agree with those things, but I do have a problem with what happened in the White House, in the Oval Office. You might wonder why I have a problem, and we'll talk about that here on the program today. The problem is not whether there should be peace, but whether there should be peace at all costs. You see, the Bible says men will cry, peace, peace, but there is no peace. Why is there no peace? Because they're not dealing with the fundamentals of what makes for peace. The fundamentals for what makes for peace are not agreements on a piece of paper. It goes much deeper than that. It goes to the very heart of the matter that unifies a people that once were supposedly unified. Did you know that? Ukraine existed before Russia. Oh, really? In fact, what became a Russia was originally called Kievan Rus. Kiev was the heart of the beginning of Russia. Oh, I didn't know that. Well, now you do. We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
In 988, Kiev, on behalf of Ukraine, it was then called Kievan Rus, was declared a Christian nation. Long before Russia ever became Russia. Did you know that? I bet you didn't. And now there's war between the Russian Orthodox Church under Vladimir Putin and the Kievan Orthodox Church under Zelensky. Really? A spiritual war going on? You got it. It's not just out of the battlefield, friends. It's a spiritual problem. Many people are being arrested. Churches are being burned. People are being killed in the name of religious power by Russia under Vladimir Putin and, yes, by Mr. Zelensky. So let's go back and take a very, very quick look at Ukraine. Ukraine is the second largest country in all of Europe after Russia. Does that sound like it might be pretty important? Much more important than Americans might think? Because all they hear is Russia, Russia, Russia? Crimea was a peninsula region of Ukraine. Remember what happened with Crimea a few years ago? Under Democrat leadership in this country, Russia came in and took over Crimea. Yet Crimea had been awarded to Ukraine in 1954, I believe it was. So if Mr. Zelensky is concerned about security in his country, if some sort of peace agreement should be made with Russia, he has every reason to be concerned. But we kind of conveniently forget those things, don't we? It's out of sight, out of mind. We just want peace. Make us feel good. Let's have peace. Yeah, peace is great. Let's stop the killing. Why is the killing taking place? Well, we don't want to talk about that. We just want to stop the killing. Maybe we should talk about why the killing is taking place. That's one of the things that Zelensky is concerned with, and Mr. Trump doesn't quite grasp the depth of that concern. And it came out in the Oval Office thing. And so it turned into an argument. There was no willingness to listen to that concern. No, the only thing that was on the table was, let's do a deal. What kind of a deal? An economic deal. Let's get involved, the U.S., in the Ukraine's vast mineral resources so as to pay back the United States for the $200 billion that we have donated, actually, to Ukraine. We didn't loan it to Ukraine, we donated it. Unlike many in Europe that loaned money to Ukraine. So Mr. Trump wants to get back the $200 billion that we gave Ukraine. Maybe that some of it was a loan, I cannot tell you, but most of it was given. The Fertile Central Plateau in Ukraine is among the world's greatest producers of wheat and barley. This is not a second-rate place in the world. In 1918, following the Russian Revolution, Ukraine declared independence and was invaded by the Red Army. A unified, independent Ukraine was once more proclaimed. The Red Army invaded again. Are you beginning to get the picture why Mr. Zelensky might be concerned? In 1921, with Ukraine, was ceded to Poland, and in 1922, East Ukraine became a constituent republic of the Soviet Union. In the 1930s, Stalin's autocratic agricultural collectivization caused 7.5 million Ukrainians to die of famine. Do you think the Ukrainians have forgotten that? No, I've talked with many of them that have come here. After 1945, when I was born and the UN was founded, all Ukrainian land was unified into a single Soviet republic. But in 1954, the Crimea was annexed to Ukraine, not Russia. Ukraine became one of the most powerful republics in the Soviet Union, contributing 30% of total Soviet industrial output. Does that sound like it was second rate? No. After a unilateral declaration of sovereignty in 1990, Ukraine proclaimed its independence in August of 1991 when the Soviet Union fell apart. You'll remember that. Now, that is a interesting distilled summary of Ukraine. So let's talk about Russia for just a moment. Russia, the Russian Federation, is the world's largest country. It covers 11 time zones. It's massive. The Caspian Sea is the world's largest inland body of water. Believe it or not, St. Petersburg, Russia's second largest major white seaport, is the second largest city of the Baltic seaport. If you go back in history, you find that the Varangian king, Rurik, established the first Russian state in AD 862. Except that one has to question whether it really was a Russian state at that time. That's what they want to make you believe that it was. But the successor to Rurik, a fellow by the name of Oleg, made Kyiv his capital, and the state became known as Kievan Rus. Vladimir I adopted Greek Orthodox Christianity as the state religion in 988. Kyiv was the epicenter of Orthodox Christianity there in Ukraine, not in Russia per se. Vladimir and Kyiv vied for political supremacy. Then, several hundred years later, things got really rough for Kievan Rus. The Mongols came in, they messed with Moscow, and they messed with Kyiv, and we're not going to go into all of the details that came out of that, because we don't need to. What we need to know is there is a historical entanglement between Russia and Ukraine that is much deeper than anyone wants to admit. And hence, when things run that deep in the innermost part of your relationships and soul, it's not an easy thing to have all that torn apart with the mere words of a president of the United States who says, "We're going to make peace. You're having a very difficult time. You can't make it. We're the ones that have provided, so give it all up. Give it all up. Make peace." So Zelensky says, I'm distilling what happened there. What happened in the White House is Zelensky says, okay, we're willing to do that. We're willing to accept this mineral agreement that you've come here to accomplish. But we want to make sure that behind that is a guarantee of security. Trump says, no way, we're not going to get into that. We're going to do this deal and this deal. And Zelensky says, no, we have to have some sort of security agreement to protect us because Russia cannot be trusted. They're right. Russia cannot be trusted. What has been the history of the relationship between the United States and Russia? I remember going back into the 1960s with Khrushchev. He was going to destroy America. He said so. He told us exactly how he was going to do it. He's the one that had the standoff with Kennedy, the Cuban Missile Crisis. That forced us who were then in school, in high school, in Florida, to have to get up in the wee hours of the morning to go to American versus communism classes to prepare for the possibility of an immediate nuclear strike. Maybe you didn't know about that. You see, we forget an awful lot about history, and we realize that Russia is not to be trusted. On the other hand, who is to be trusted? Is anybody to be trusted? Probably nobody other than God, right? But we have to live with human beings. That means we have to listen very carefully to others' viewpoints. It doesn't mean that their viewpoints are correct, but we have to listen to them in the hope that maybe, maybe we can make a deal, so to speak, a resolution of issues that will be for the benefit or acceptability to all parties. That's not what was happening there in the White House. What was happening in the White House was an imposition of a deal that was good on its face, with Mr. Zelensky agreed to and still agrees to. But it lacked something that was critically important. So the White House, not necessarily Trump, but the White House and those in it were saying, well, we'll get to that later. We'll get to the security issues later. Really? So we're going to get involved in signing a deal to give up massive amounts of Ukrainian wealth in minerals and deposits and so on. We're going to sign that supposedly in a deal to kind of get something going here to resolve for peace. But it wasn't about peace at all. What it was about is America recovering the $200 billion that it had given to Ukraine. That's what it was really about. It wasn't about peace. Because the whole thing about peace would come later. So if you were Mr. Zelensky and representing your country, and you knew how untrustworthy your adversary was, would you be willing to sign off giving away a massive part of your country's wealth without any kind of guarantees that the very powers that to whom you were going to assign that wealth would be there and stand on your behalf for security for your country? That's really the issue. So if you see it that way, Trump had his viewpoint. His viewpoint was, we're going to make peace. I'm the writer. I'm the author of The Art of the Deal. And we're going to make peace. And this is how we're going to go about doing it. And so he had it all set forth in his agenda. I don't fault him for that. But that's the start of the negotiations. That's not the end of them. You start with a position of vision and of strength, and then somehow there has to be some working together. But that was not the case. That was not in the view of the White House. What was in the view of the White House was, let's get this economic deal done. You'll make us feel better now. You'll make the American people feel better because now we're going to get back the monies, in effect, that we have donated. With no commitments whatsoever. Now, on top of that, can you see the effect of this in Moscow? Try to get in the mind and heart of Vladimir Putin. Basically, what he sees is the U.S. has turned tail on Ukraine, and now they're in our court. Therefore, what Trump really did, and it's not coming out of the news, what he really did was gave Vladimir Putin extra cards for dealing for peace. He didn't give equal balance to these parties. He flipped the tables. And that's what Europe is seeing. Now, I don't have a whole lot of affection for Europe and their politics, and what, but their viewpoint is has merit. What they see is the tables have been flipped. And Ukraine is the largest country of Europe. What's going on here? We'll be back.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. Today we're dealing with the Ukrainian debacle. We'll call it the Ukrainian debacle. Because Ukraine is at the heart of this. But on the other hand, what we really have here is a broken marriage. You say, really? What do you mean a broken marriage? Well, Ukraine and Russia were in effect married. Russia came out of Ukraine. They actually, in effect, were married, Kievan Rus, back in the around 900 AD. They became a Christian. Ukraine, Kievan Rus, became a Christian, Orthodox Christian nation in 988 AD. And it was only after that that all of the movement toward Russia, as we know it today, and Moscow and St. Petersburg and all of those places began to take sway over Kyiv and Ukraine. But the root was in Kyiv and Ukraine. Still is. Because the root hasn't been pulled out. It's still in the hearts of the people. So now what Russia wants to do is declare and has declared a divorce. That divorce went all the way back to the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. And they brought in Ukraine to be the largest territory within the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. But Ukraine said, you know what? We don't want to be communist. We don't want to be part of that. So they separated themselves out in 1990. You can call it a divorce. You can call it whatever you want. So here's the analogy that I want to bring. Whether or not you like the analogy that I'm bringing concerning the divorce, for many, many years, as a trial lawyer, 40% of my practice was in the area of family law, in the largest family law court system in the nation, the Los Angeles Superior Court System. 7 major courts. In fact, I think it's 9 major courts now. 80% of my clientele came from the broader body of Christ. You say, well, why are you bringing that up in the context of Ukraine and Russia? Here's the reason. Here you've got professing Christians, supposedly of the same root, the root in Christ, just like Russia and Ukraine claim to be of the same root, not only physically and geopolitically, but also spiritually, Orthodox Christianity. But they're not getting along. In fact, Russia doesn't want to get along. It's like Rodney King back there in the Watts riots in Los Angeles. Can't we all get along? No, we can't all get along because we don't want to. That's the problem. The want to, the will. And so you try to sit with Christian couples, hundreds of them over the years, friends, including still now, I'm still dealing with Christian couples who just are just, it's like they can't bring themselves to bridge the gap between them. But it's like somebody coming along then and saying, okay, this is what you're going to do. I don't care what you think. I don't care what you're going to, what you want to do. This is what you're going to do. And that's it. That's what Donald Trump did in the Oval Office to Ukraine. So there was no ability to discuss, not really. On the other hand, Mr. Trump admitted in writing after the meeting that things came out amid the emotional tension that could never have come out, understandings that they never could have really come to grips with if they had not had that tempestuous conversation. Oftentimes, that's the way it works in trying to settle cases. How many cases have I had to try to settle? Not just in family law cases, but in civil cases. And you run up against the same thing. But here's what has to happen. Please try to understand this. You can't just right out of the chute say, okay, we're going to settle this today and that's it. Let's suppose that I have an auto accident case or a major slip and fall case or something like that, and I'm dealing with an insurance company, and I've made a claim on behalf of my client, and we're now approaching trial. It's been 2 or 3 years, and now we're approaching trial. We've done all of our discovery, and now fish is coming, or the rooster, the chickens are coming home to roost. And you got to do something. So you're trying to negotiate. You're going back and forth, trying to negotiate in different ways with the insurance adjuster and so on. Well, sometimes in going back and forth and pointing out different aspects of your case and so on, you can come to an agreement. But what does that take? It takes conversation. And it takes time to go through those steps. But you see, no time was being afforded to Mr. Zelensky. No, you're here. You do it right now. And if you don't do it now, you're ungrateful. Now, since I brought up the word ungrateful, do I believe that there's a certain aspect of Mr. Zelensky being ungrateful? Yes. I think he has been induced by the Biden administration to be a bit of an entitlement kind of a political figure. He began to feel like he was entitled because, after all, our country and specifically the Democrats said, this is all about saving democracy. Is that what it was about? I'm not convinced. That was just the sales point for giving massive amounts of money to Ukraine. It wasn't about democracy per se. One even wonders whether there's a democracy in Ukraine. There's so much graft. But then again, Russia thinks they're in a democracy too. They have votes. They vote. So let's forget about the democracy thing. That was just a sales point, a marketing tool. There was no real reality to it. It was a way to justify monumental gifts of money. But for what purpose? Was it really to save the world for democracy? I don't think so. What it was really about was to bring Ukraine into NATO. That's what it was really about. And that's why Russia attacked. Since 2014, Russia had warned and warned and warned and warned the United States and Europe and NATO, do not bring Ukraine into NATO. Because if you try to do that, you're going to take this massive country with its border all along the Russian border, and you're going to put up all your powerful military there, and you're going to threaten the sovereignty of our country. We're not going to let you do it. Didn't listen. Did not listen. So they kept moving toward Ukraine becoming part of NATO. That was the big deal. It wasn't about democracy. Come on. You got to be able to see through the nonsense, friends, and see what things are really about. And by the way, through the pursuit of NATO, guess what happened? Nations were moved from their pre-existing positions into a heretofore unexpected order. What was that? The Baltic states then became part of NATO that they had resisted becoming part of for years, for decades and decades and decades. And all of a sudden, they decided to become part of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Well, what was the net result of that? The net result of that, friends, was the final unification of almost all of the nations that were previously part of the ancient Roman Empire, that the prophet Daniel said was going to be the last major power on earth for the one world order to wrap things up in world history. Now are you beginning to see that this might just be a much bigger picture? And back to the marriage thing. You know, how many times have I tried and tried in many, many different ways to bring husbands and wives together, professing to be followers of Jesus Christ? And they refuse. And you can't just expect it right on the dime because there's so much emotion that's involved. Just like there was so much emotion involved there in the White House. By the way, that should never have taken place in that setting. Unfortunately, what Trump thought was going to take place and what actually took place were two different things. Trump thought he had a clear line to get a signature on the economic deal without any remonstrance or issues presented by Vladimir Zelensky. Didn't work that way because Zelensky is concerned about his country. He said, I want your deal, Mr. President. I want your deal. He didn't respect the deal, but he said, I need some security. What are we going to do about that? And Trump didn't like it. Neither did J.D. Vance. They called that disrespect because America had given so much money. Was it disrespect? I'll leave that up to your thoughts. We'll be right back after this.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Let's take a look at the fallout or the spin out coming from the White House debacle there last Friday between Zelensky and our President Donald J. Trump. First of all, a defiant but tactful Zelensky seeks to move on from the White House fiasco. He was speaking just before flying out to the UK, to which he had traveled immediately after the disastrous White House meeting, where he was accused of not being grateful for U.S. military support and was told Ukraine could not win the war. He also said he believed that an Anglo-French-led peace effort discussed by European leaders in London on Sunday would bear fruit in the coming weeks, and indicated there were supportive declarations from other countries such as Turkey, the Baltics, and the Nordics to get involved. The conference in London also discussed what security guarantees could be given to Ukraine. Notice they're choosing to focus on security guarantees that Trump refused to talk about. Zelensky said, adding that there had been a very good start in Sunday's discussion. Why? Because somebody listened to him. They don't have to agree with everything he said, but they have to listen. That's how you get a deal. Speaking at the end of the interview, he gave his only answer in English. He said, Ukraine will never recognize any Russian annexation of territory that it occupies, even if it is to try to secure a peace deal. Zelensky added, and he repeated that he would only accept a ceasefire if it was followed by robust security guarantees that had the confidence of the country's people. Question, what would you expect of your president? To enter into some sort of a peace thing that was going to open your country's borders to invasion just in order to get some so-called peace that was going to be illusory? No. Zelensky says, no, I'm not going to do that. Now, where will all this go? The interesting thing is that Trump, rightly saying, said, who holds the cards here? What cards do you hold? Well, the only card that Zelensky holds is he's president of Ukraine. And he still has the support of Democrats in this country who claim that the issue there has nothing to do with NATO, but has everything to do with democracy. And the Europeans now are coming alongside and seeing this is an opportunity for Europe to stand up when it's been dependent upon the United States to do all of its work for them, and now Europe can become Europe and stand with their fellow Ukraine and do what is necessary to protect them. That's what's really happening. The NATO chief, however, urged Zelensky to make peace with Trump, to mend ties with U.S. President Donald Trump. Well, wait a minute. Is he supposed to make peace with Trump? Or is he supposed to make peace with Russia? Or is Trump the same as Russia in this case? See, that's where some of the problems are. Because Zelensky begins to see what is really happening here is the taking of sides on the side of Vladimir Putin. He says he can't be trusted. So there is truth on both sides. That's the reality. There is truth on both sides. There are motivations on both sides that are legitimate. Is it true, like U.S. National Security Advisor Mike Waltz said, that time isn't on Zelensky's side? Absolutely, time is not on his side. But there still needs to be a little bit of time because the great push is on now. Somebody has to be able to think through all of the details. Then came this from The Guardian in the UK. Trump said Zelensky doesn't have the cards. But this author says, but how well is Trump playing his own hand? Ah, it's hard for Americans to see it that way. But that's what I've been bringing up here. I think Trump has a very good understanding of geopolitics, more so than most people today. He has insight that very few people have. But that doesn't make him God. And it's very easy, a human being, when you're on the top of the world, so to speak, and you're having such tremendous success, to kind of carry that a little too far and try to force an issue that's going to need a little time to work through. Not much time, but a little time. Another article says a high-stakes transatlantic miscommunication is unfolding with the potential to produce far worse consequences than the Oval Office contrapunch between Donald Trump and Vladimir Zelensky could possibly believe. And I agree with that. Elon Musk is calling for the U.S. to leave NATO and the U.N. What does that mean? That's a major shift of nations. A major shift of nations. Is that really? I mean, Donald Trump has actually suggested that. So in response came this from the EU's top diplomat, who had previously suggested that the European Union must replace the U.S. as the world's leader. No, that the bloc, not the European Union, that the Russian bloc, Russian President Vladimir Putin, should be the leader of the free world, said the former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev. His remarks came in response to the EU's top diplomat, who suggested that the bloc must assume the mantle from the U.S. following Washington's policy shift on Ukraine. Do you see what's happening here, friends? This is a much bigger deal than anybody's talking about. Kallas took a swipe at Trump, writing, "Ukraine is Europe. We stand by Ukraine. We will step up our support to Ukraine so that they can continue to fight back the aggressor. Today it became clear that the free world needs a new leader. It's up to us, Europeans, to take this challenge." But in an interview on Saturday, Medvedev from Russia, who now serves as the deputy chairman of the Russian Security Council, agreed that the title of leader of the free world should be transferred from the U.S. to another party, but not the EU. He said the world needs one, and he exists. His name is Vladimir Putin. Are you seeing what is happening, friends? A major shift in the nations of the world. We don't have time to go into all of the further details, but there is in hand, moving right now, the French President Macron has detailed a French-UK peace plan for Ukraine. And that seems to be attracting Mr. Zelensky. Why? Because it offers security, which Mr. Trump has not offered. Will Mr. Trump offer that? We'll see. The former Polish president, Walesa, said that Trump's treatment of Zelensky was offensive. Maybe you don't see it that way, but others do. Because it was sort of a bullying kind of thing. Here's the deal. You either take it or leave it. And if you don't take it, you're out of here and so are we. In other words, there's no room for conversation. That's really what happened. So, what I call this is the Ukraine debacle, the movement, the repositioning of the nations of the world. Oh, the repositioning of the nations of the world. Friends, do you not realize that that's exactly what has to happen in order for biblical prophecy to be fulfilled? The nations have to be repositioned. Otherwise, they will not be in the place that the Bible foretells that they will be in order to fulfill, for instance, the Gog and Magog war of Ezekiel 38 and 39, the prophecy of Daniel with the great colossus and the final being the ancient Roman Empire, being resurrected in our time? See, these things are happening. And if it had not been for Russia's attack on Ukraine, when it did, those things would not have happened. It precipitated something that otherwise seemed impossible. And therein lies the problem, excuse me, with so many people's interpretation of the Bible. They come up to things like, well, it seems like there should be a rebuilt temple, but that's impossible to happen because, and then they tell their reasons why it's impossible. If God says it's going to happen, it's not impossible. Just because you think it's impossible, given current circumstances, doesn't mean it's impossible. It was impossible for Mary to get pregnant without having sex with her husband. But the angel said, with God, nothing shall be impossible. We have a very hard time as American Christians to understand how God works. He's God. And we look at things on the horizontal plane. We look at history in a very horizontal way. We can't seem to get the bigger picture of history. In fact, in many respects, we don't even want to know about history. We just want to know what's happening right now. We've even forgot the history going back to 2014. When Russia warned Ukraine, Russia warned the U.S., Russia warned Europe, Russia warned NATO. Don't try to absorb Ukraine into NATO, or this is what's going to happen. And that's what happened. Now, you may not like what he said. You might not agree with it, but that's history. That is history. And as it is frequently said, those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Okay. Now, I hope this has been somewhat of a helpful conversation here. Things aren't just as clear as they appear to be when you listen to certain talking voices out there that have particular political agendas that they're trying to drive, and they want to sell their position. Much of so-called conservative broadcasting is that way. Liberal broadcasting is the same way. Not willing to see the bigger picture. But Christians should always be willing to see the bigger picture. Because if we don't, we're just as bad as the rest of the world. We have to have discernment. Discerning spirits. And if there's anything that's required of us in this day and age, not just with regard to geopolitics and those kinds of things, but particularly with regard to our relationships with others, our relationships in our own marriages, our relationships with our neighbors, our friends, business people, and so on. Friends, we have got to have the Spirit of Christ ruling in and through us, no matter what the circumstances are out there. And it's got to start at home, in our marriages, right? Right. Thanks for joining us here. Become a partner, friends. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $5 for postage and handling. Actually, you don't have to write anything. Just write a check. Or give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA. I hope that if you value this program, whether or not you agree with every single point is not the issue. We're trying to discuss the issues in a very sincere and thoughtful way, not regurgitating all the stuff that you can hear anywhere else. God bless and be a blessing. And pray for this situation, friends.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.